The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. How will the world feed 6 billion people? The world failed to replenish its depleted food stocks in 1975, and the outlook for the hungry in 1976 is very bleak because bumper and grain harvests in North America were offset, you see, by the poor crops in Europe and the Soviet Union. We can talk about the political problems of wheat deals. We can talk about detente, the arguments back and forth between American farmers who desperately need markets for what they are told by the government to raise. We can talk about a fair market value or price for the farmer's wheat, all the soaring costs attendant upon inflation that bring about unbelievable problems for America's farmers are trying to grow the food grains to feed not only the United States, the cornucopia, the basket of plenty of the world, but also the other hungry nations of the world, which depends primarily upon the United States, and with the United States, the other two or three major food grain growers of the world, Canada and Argentina, among them. But it's time to look at the single greatest problem confronting all of humankind in the overview of the other problems of the threat of war in 1976 in the Middle East, of Egypt pushing its atomic power ambition, of the toppling of governments around the world, of Soviet dominance and influence in Africa, of the growing might of the Soviet worldwide fleet. And just try to appraise all that is occurring around the world in the light of Bible prophecy. Jesus Christ of Nazareth was a prophet, a newscaster, who looked beyond his day into ours, and who foretold a time of vast, worldwide disequilibrium. The Bible calls it Great Tribulation. That's in verse 21 of the 24th chapter of Matthew, when he says, "Then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be." He said, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. Doesn't it strike you as a little bit hard? As you look around the world's religions, at the religious picture of the world, at the upsurgence now of many charismatic movements in many churches, including the Catholics, of a renewed intensity of fervor, of emotionalism in religion, of people who want to become involved in teaching and preaching about the name, the love of Jesus Christ of Nazareth. But the millions upon millions of people who seem to ignore the incisive statements Christ made about global problems of catastrophic proportions, which would threaten the very survival of the human race. We live in a time where human survival is the biggest question before humankind. How to survive? Will we still be here as a civilization on into the next century? I said time and again, it's about the moment of history when the United States, in its bicentennial year, take a good long look at how far we have come toward the realization of the dreams of our founding fathers, and I have been particularly bearing down on this nonsense of washing our linen before the world, trying to expose all of our hidden governmental agencies, the CIA, the FBI, and the rest, so they can be machine gunned down in foreign capitals. The idea that we seem to be required to play the deadly game of power politics, geopolitics, and a world filled with tigers who want us dead, but play by some arbitrarily imposed rules which we unilaterally recognize, but which the others do not. It doesn't seem to make sense to so handicap ourselves in dealing with other countries who want us dead that we think we're going to get some response out of them, such as some great acknowledgement of the deep spirituality, the high morality, the integrity and honesty of the United States of America, who would not dare to have a spy at work in any foreign capital, though they, these other countries of the Third World, the Soviet Union, the Afro-Asian bloc, of course, have hundreds and thousands of spies at all levels, infiltrating everything from business, commerce, industry, entertainment, art, literature, the media, electronic and printed, and all the way to government. And they don't publish in the Soviet Union papers and magazines telling us their names and addresses, their personal habits, and with their photographs. But we do, because we seem to feel we've got to play the game. The ominous game of world power politics and the struggle for world dominion unabated, which is the aim and the goal of the communist bloc of nations. But we've got to play it by some kind of arbitrarily impose constraints or rules which we ourselves have made up. Law of that is a myth. All of that is a complete myth of the playing of the game by the rules which are not known or acknowledged by the other countries who want us dead. Now, you look at the Bible and you look at what Jesus said about global, massive dislocations, upheavals, chaos, global catastrophes, which are going to affect the entirety of humankind, and I say you could not have understood the statement Jesus made that no flesh would be saved alive except God intervened, short of the very moment of history in which we live. The latter part of this 20th century. What are the problems today? Well, the potential for massive global catastrophes grows every day, every week. Nuclear arms race, not really abated, only changes in character. The gigantic dislocation of world's wealth, fiscal chaos, rocking the Western industrialists from the beginning of the energy crisis at the onset of the war in 1973, when at least it became more known to the general American public and the public elsewhere in the Western democracies, though I think we still do not pay attention to it. We've grown jaded. A little bit accustomed to it, perhaps a little bit apathetic, because we've gotten used to the higher costs of fuel, and the old Whirlpool story seems to apply. So many people have talked about energy crises that we're just a little tired of hearing about it, yet it still is a very dramatic problem on the world scene, and we are becoming every single year far more dependent upon Arab and other imported oil, and therefore far more vulnerable to the whimsical caprice of unstable governments in other parts of the world who are totally dead set against American policy. One of the biggest, most monumental problems facing humankind is not a religious or a spiritual problem. It's a question, how will we feed the world's 6 billion people? In the human survival section of the current Plain Truth, coming out once a month, newsprint tabloid that you can have free of charge is a very vitally important article. By the year 2000, how will we feed the world's 6 billion people? I want to discuss that article with you because it's the single most important problem facing humankind today. We didn't replenish our depleted food stocks in 1975. And the outlook for the hungry in 1976 is not good, because bumper grain harvests in North America, which while they were good, they weren't as high as they'd been previously expected because of weather and other reverses, but they were still good. But these were offset by poor crops in Europe and the Soviet Union. Year-end wheat stocks are likely to be an even lower mark than they were in 1974, when they were drained by a worldwide food shortage. And as a result, the world will be dependent for what it eats in 1976 on what it is able to grow because of the shortage of reserves. I've called this the largest single problem facing humankind. Every single day, so silently, yet inexorably, the food versus population curve approaches crossover, and the crisis closes in on an overcrowded world now containing 4 billion people as of November 1975. It's the most complex problem and the most nearly insoluble problem that has ever faced the human race. Actually, perhaps even ahead of nuclear annihilation, but at least so far as its imminent priorities, next to nuclear annihilation, the potential for a nuclear bomb war, the crisis of food versus population is the greatest threat to survival for hundreds of millions of the Earth's inhabitants, and yet it is largely ignored. Most people are just unaware of it. Already, you see, this world is so hard-pressed to keep food supplies ahead of population growth and food demand that it's a mind-bending story when you learn about it. This article in the current number of the Plain Truth tells you the entire story. I want to tell you a little bit about the article because it gives quotations from George Borgeson and other absolute experts from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and other areas, and gives you some charts and graphs that show you exactly what is happening in world grain trade, the dangerous dependence of many other countries on North America, and projections for 1976 in millions of metric tons, world population 4 billion and rising fast, an alarming graph that is given in the human survival section of the current number of the Plain Truth you can have by return mail, because this article I'm talking about of this huge problem and appraising and assessing the problem in the light of what Bible prophecy says is coming is containing the current number with the headline, "The Middle East in 1976, Will It Be More of the Same?" For humanity as a whole is literally today living from hand to mouth. You know that there is less food per person on this planet today than there was 30 years ago? That world population is growing about 2% per year? That food supply is increasing by 2.5%, but food demand is increasing 3%? And that sounds like very, very small figures until you read this article and see the enormous number of millions of lives affected by those seemingly very small figures. When you talk of 2.5%, of 4 billion people, that's an awful lot of human beings. Affluence is one reason. Rising expectations and higher food demands on developing countries is another. These emerge as major new claimants on world food supplies, in addition to, of course, the enormous population increases continuing. So we're living as a whole on this narrow little support system in this globe, this earth of ours, that is like a spaceship out here on a journey in the darkness of space, and yet we're living hand to mouth, staking everything on next year's harvest, and we've got to depend for that on the blessings of good weather. But in recent years, as you study the weather patterns of the world with the monsoon failures, the droughts, and other weather upsets, it doesn't give you a great deal of optimism. Those who said we were entering in the middle 1970s, where we are today, a cooling cycle, a drought cycle, who had looked back at the various weather patterns of past years and predicted very, very accurately the drought cycle in the Northern Hemisphere, especially in the United States, on about a 20-year basis, are accurate in those predictions. Witness the Dust Bowl of the 30s, the other big drought that struck in the 50s, and already signs of the same type of thing happening in the middle 1970s. Weather upsets in the past few years have devastated immense crop areas in the Soviet Union and in China, Africa, and India, and that's why the shortfall on their production, and that's why we have failed to replenish our depleted food stocks in 1975, and that's why, even though the Soviet Union in its official publication does not admit to its own people its failures, its crop disasters, its inability to feed its own people, and does not admit to them where their bread comes from because of purchases of gigantic numbers of billions of bushels of wheat from the United States of America. Nevertheless, if you were to go to some of the most remote little villages in all of the sprawling vastness of the Soviet Union, over in Belarusia or Georgia, Azerbaijan, Irkutsk, or elsewhere, and you would find peasants sitting down to a good meal of bread, maybe it would be impressive to find out that the grain they made that bread from came from Kansas or Nebraska or Iowa or Illinois, or maybe even from the wheat belt of Canada. Maybe it would get the point across that these massive weather upsets had come along in not only the Soviet Union, China, Africa, India, but even in parts of the United States. And under the combined assault of bad weather, soaring populations, and affluent demands, world food grain reserves has plummeted from 95 days supply in 1961 to less than 30 days supply today. It's like an ominous, unremitting struggle. It's like a ragged, beating edge of a scythe labeled famine that reaps an increasing toll in suffering and death in the Earth's famine belt, Africa, the Sub-Sahara, Latin America, many parts of Asia, and the periphery of Southeast Asia, and for that matter, even in some of the affluent countries where people still starve. Hunger, malnutrition presently plague over half of all of the human race. Over 500 million are chronically hungry, barely surviving on the edge of life. The other debilitating diseases, the lack of protein in diet, that bring along with it the apathy and the lack of mental agility, ingenuity, creativity, the lack of drive and of the feeling of vitality. The other horrible diseases, while you can't definitely say it is starvation, yet the point is, that very low nutritional level diet is known by any nutritionist or doctor to be the direct result of a whole host of diseases. So while millions die every year diagnosed with this or that or the other horrible disease, the true one major reason was poor nutrition, starvation level diet, but that isn't the culprit that got the blame. It was some fever. It was something else that happened. So it's far more than just 500 million people. It goes on up into more than half of the human race, which is over 2 billion human beings. Now, these unfortunate millions and billions, living right on the very edge of survival, are more or less recognizable as you look in some of the countries of the world where that is so rife. Physical disabilities, bloated or mutilated bodies might indicate nutritional deficiency on the edge of starvation. But there are far more who are dying for other alleged causes, where the underlying cause has been living on the edge of starvation, but never going over the edge. You know, there are people who are called food futurists who are studying the curves of food versus population and trying to predict what the future will hold. And what really haunts them and worries them today is this. Food supplies can only be increased gradually, but populations are destined to grow explosively despite reductions in birth rates in many significant areas of the world in recent years, especially Japan. In 1965, global population was increasing at about 2% annually. Due to national and international efforts, the rate has been brought down to 1.7% in 1974. Whether future declines will be rapid enough to stave off massive famines is a great unanswered question. Population and food officials then are disclosing that close to a doubling of current food production is already needed just to bring the world's present population up to an adequate dietary level. But can you imagine? We are producing, as has been said over and over again, at absolute maximum in the United States. The acres of soil bank, virtually gone. Government subsidies turn around to virtual government penalties if people do not plant every available acre. The reason many farmers are saying it would be horrible of the government not to do business with the Soviet Union, and seems to come across rather vaguely or not at all to the general public, is simply because the government has imposed various penalties upon the farmer if the farmer does not plant every available acre of wheat or food grains because of political considerations of doing business with the Soviet Union and détente. And the farmer doesn't want the government to come along and listen to the political voice of some people who would say, let's not sell 1 ounce of grain to the Soviet Union, because if that happens, the farmer, who has overextended himself because of government demand, finds no market for his food grains, cannot meet costs, has overextended himself in the high cost of producing the grain, cannot find a market for it to offset that high cost and make a profit, and so simply goes under. It's just that simple. But can you imagine? Here we are producing at just about maximum level, and yet the food futurists say you've got to double food production. How do you do that? This world is mostly water. That small, comparatively part of it, which is not water, is mostly desert, mountain, ice caps, steep and precipitous areas, which are inhospitable to human habitation. The actual percentage of the earth which is fit for human habitation is only a very tiny percentage of the surface of the earth. The average depth of soil that is tillable or arable that has humus on it around the world is so finite, so minute, that it would stagger you to know how little there really is. We in the United States of Cornucopia America don't seem to realize that if they could take 1 square mile of Iowa or Illinois and plant it somewhere in the center of the African continent, it might be that they wouldn't even raise crops on it. It might be they would fence it in and call it a national park, because it would be so dumbfounded to find that topsoil goes so deep, when in much of the world it just doesn't exist at all. We need to understand that food officials are disclosing that a doubling of current food production is already needed just to keep up with the present population of the world. And if we accept the conservative figure of 6 billion people, that's 2 billion more than we've got now, living on this earth at the beginning of the 21st century, then food production 4 times the present level will be required. Another aspect of the population crisis, not really appreciated as it should be, is that a major global food crisis is assured unless dramatic reductions in birth rates are forthcoming. We ought to understand that even if all known family planning methods were pushed to the fullest, the world's population will still almost double by about 2006, according to Douglas Ensminger, an internationally recognized population expert. He said, and I quote, even if we succeed in substantially lowering the world population rate, The number of people for several decades will grow faster than we are likely to succeed in increasing food production. Several developed nations have come very close to achieving zero population growth. A few have achieved it, but it's still nowhere near enough. So you have to assume the miraculous had happened. And if the number of children born to every woman in the developing countries was cut in half, roughly about replacement level fertility, meaning every couple would replace themselves and have no more. That would mean zero world population growth. But it still could not be achieved, according to the experts, until the end of the next century. 100 more years. In the meantime, the cumulative population of the Earth would so soar that the gigantic global catastrophes indicated in Bible prophecy, and indicated now by seers and sages who may not even know anything at all about Bible prophecy, who may be completely irreligious, who may know nothing about Jesus Christ or his statements, and yet are saying the same thing. That's a significant thing, perhaps we ought to point out, that there are dozens of very serious-minded scientists who are studying the problems confronting humankind, and they are virtually forced to use biblical language, apocalyptic kind of language, to explain to the general public just how bad the situation is. If the population ceiling then of 2 children were suddenly universally adopted, it would still mean over 5 billion people on Earth by the year 2100, and world population would gradually level off only after that high threshold had been reached. The United States Population Reference Bureau summed up the situation as follows, quote, in order to achieve an ongoing population, even in most of the developed countries, fertility would have to decline significantly below the replacement level. In less developed countries, such a situation seems inconceivable during the coming 50 years. You know, since the early 60s, literally hundreds of top-ranking leaders in all fields have echoed various apocalyptic kinds of warnings of famines ahead unless mankind unitedly acts to rapidly increase food supplies and to blunt population growth. These experts tell us that the world cannot survive unless we do something about it. And yet, despite the multitude of warnings that mankind can solve the onrushing food population crisis only if we act now, most nations act as if it is somebody else's problem. Remember the food conference at Rome, and how we sent our own experts over there to listen in, and how we commented that the people who were there of the third world countries were actually saying the United States was guilty of creating an artificial crisis of food versus population in order to try to prevent some of the third world countries from increasing their populations, that it was merely a political football for the United States, that there was no such thing as a food versus population curve. It is the contrivance of our own people to try to stifle the growth and the development of third world countries. Brazil said that, further others. Dr. George Bornstam, as a noted population expert, said a few years ago, we are participating in a grand-scale evasion of reality which brings all the signs, or bears all the signs, rather, of insanity. He went on to say, nothing less is required than a global will to act to ward off calamity. Thomas M. Ware, head of the Freedom from Hunger Foundation, said before a Senate subcommittee as early as 10 years ago, and I quote, very few grasp the magnitude of the danger that confronts us. He said the catastrophe is not something that may happen. On the contrary, it is a mathematical certainty that it will happen. And as it develops every single year, most people sinfully go about their own day-to-day business, their own day-to-day pleasures in life, and seem not to know what is impending. You ought to write for this article. It's an insert in our new Human Survival section of The Plain Truth. It gives you the fact of what prophecy says about 6 billion people, no matter what, how death rates have been cut in half, but birth rates are going up. It asks whether or not science can come to our rescue, whether or not birth control will work. Can America play God and decide which country to save and which country to write off? It discusses weather upsets ahead and whether or not America will be able to feed itself. Cruel as it sounds, can the United States conceivably be forced to write off millions of starving people in nations that would deduce are already so far over the brink it is impossible to bring them back? That's covered in this article, which is quite extensive, thoroughly documented, illustrated by graphs. It shows you what would be required to solve the food versus population curve. It shows you in these graphs that a seemingly small pace, 2% per year population growth, means the following. even though it's deceptively small when you talk in percentages, that every day the world adds 210,000 new people, or every single day that's another city on the earth about the size of Des Moines, Iowa, or Albuquerque, New Mexico. Every week, this world adds 1.5 million people, or a city the size of Manila, Montreal, Detroit, or Saigon. Every month, the world adds 6.5 million people, or a metropolis the size of Los Angeles County and all of its cities, or Cook County, Chicago, and all of its attendant cities. That means that every year, the world adds another 76 million people, or another nation, the size of the combined populations of East and West Germany, or the size of Bangladesh. Now this and all of these other matters, especially what Bible prophecy says about it, an article called Words Are Hard to Eat, how the world's 4 billionth inhabitant gasped his first breath during the third week of November 1975. That article from Washington, from our regional editor there. And also, A Feast for Rats, an article that shockingly shows that agricultural losses from rat infestation exceed $240 million a year. That's in India, by the way. And it shows how at the moment food development experts are working on several ways of trying to stem the waste of food crops, but it shows the waste problem, the tragic problem of waste in some of the areas of the third world where improper storage, rats, the black market, spoilage, waste, one way or another, causes an additional 280 tons of grain to be lost. These articles coming along in the current number of The Plain Truth, absolutely free of charge, graphically illustrated, that deal with the really big problems confronting you and me and all of humankind in the light of Bible prophecy. So if you write to The Plain Truth, it's absolutely free of charge, there is no price. Find out whether or not it's really what it says it is, The Plain Truth. There's no request for money, there's no follow-up. No one's going to call on you unless you, of course, request it first. So be sure to request The Plain Truth, and remember, it's absolutely free. There is no charge. We'll get it in the mail to you as quickly as we receive your letter. There's never any bill to follow. We would like to know the call letters of the station which you're listening, the name of this radio station, and then we'll get your Plain Truth in the mail as quickly as we can. If you send your letter to Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, brought to you by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your request, along with the call letters of this station, to Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales.